My guest in the studio tonight is one third of one of the most extraordinary groups on the planet. He's performed with many of the cornerstones of Australian music, Clarion Fracture Zone, the Bernie McGann Trio, Vince Jones and Wendy Matthews, just to name a few. In 1991, he formed what has become a cornerstone in Australian music, the Catholics, and of course prior to that, in the mid-80s, along with Tony Buck and Chris Abrahams, he formed The Necks. He's appeared on more than 60 albums, including several ARIA Award winners. Lloyd Swanton, welcome to Now's the Time.
It's a pleasure to be here, Frank. Thank you very much.
Lloyd, when the trio came up with the formula, the next formula, those slowly unfolding motifs, that underlying deep groove, the lengthy pieces, did you ever think that those elements would still underpin your music 20 years later or nearly 20 years later?
Well, I think maybe the secret for the success of the band was that we had no ambition for it whatsoever. Some people may not be aware that when we put the band together, it was actually intended as a private jamming band. In fact, we were quite adamant that we didn't want to perform in public. We wanted to work on these ideas and be free of audience pressure and expectations. However, after several months of fairly intensive workshopping, we realized that we had something pretty wonderful on our hands. We decided to go public, so to speak, and I think because we had such modest expectations for the band and such a purist approach to it, I think it's put us in really good stead. We found something that worked, and here we are nearly 20 years later, and it's still working for us.
And is there a particular aspect of the music that makes it so compelling for so many people? What is it?
Well, obviously I can't be totally objective about it, but I do enjoy playing the music myself, and I think it's just that sense of exploration and discovering new vistas you had no idea were just around the corner. As a performer, if there's one lesson I've learnt as an improvising performer, it's that if you don't think things are going quite the way you hoped they would go, don't panic, don't change anything, stay where you are. Maybe it's a little bit like when you get lost in the bush. They say, don't just start going everywhere, because I think you'll find in a lot of improvised situations and a lot of jazz situations, people want to actively contribute all the time, and we've actually learnt that doing the opposite is often far more fruitful, that if you just sit and wait to get through this particular difficult passage, suddenly the most magnificent musical sort of landscapes appear in front of you, and it's like, ah, yes, I had no idea that's where we were going. And you can feel that with the audience sometimes too. They suddenly realise where it's headed, and they're delighted to be going along with us.
And I can't help but think that the music even influenced the latest Catholics album in that it has that atmospheric sort of sound that seemed to come through.
I'm not sure that it influenced it so much as when I formed the Catholics a few years after the Necks. I did have some ideas of applying some of the Necks principles to a slightly larger ensemble in a slightly less improvised fashion, a little more structured because of the number of performers with seven in the Catholics. I think the system that we have with the Necks is more or less foolproof with the small number of performance just being a trio. And so that was something that we were actually getting into in the early days of the Catholics, but we got a little bit sidetracked by the success of what we refer to as our twitching hippie repertoire, the happy hippie stuff, where it became a good time festival band playing those infectious world rhythms. So it's only just now that I've found the time to look back and actually emphasise that aspect again and do a whole album of that atmospheric stuff.
The band has been active now for nearly 20 years, and at that time, of course, we've seen the trio concept per se flourish in jazz like we've probably never seen it before. Bands like Modesky, Martin and Wood, EST, The Bad Plus, even Triosk here in Sydney. Mm-hmm. While not necessarily referring to these trios, how influential do you think the Necks have been in those 20 years?
There's probably a few of those that have never even heard of us, but there'd be a few that I'm quietly chuffed that I actually know that they respect what we do a great deal. Yeah, I'm not sure what people have picked up from us. I think our influence has sometimes been more in music that's related to jazz, but not specifically jazz. There are some jazz purists out there that have their ideas about how the music should sound. That's fine. You know, everyone has their own take on things. I'm a little less prescriptive, I think. But certainly, yeah, we're aware that there's plenty of people around that have listened to what we do. I think we sort of cornered the market on one-hour pieces, though, and anyone that comes along and tries to do the same will often be compared with us, and who knows whether it's favourable or not.
I'm talking with Lloyd Swanson. He one third of the Next, and the reason being is a brand new Next album has hit the shelves. Well, has it really hit the shelves?
Yes, it is. It's been out since middle of June.
It's on the Fish of Milk label, as they all are. Lloyd, is that correct?
Yes, it's actually our label. It's what I understand in the business is known as a vanity label. It's where you set it up just to release your own product, and I think there is one exception, which is a live album we did on a Russian label when we performed in Moscow, and the venue, the people there were wonderful people. They really looked after us well, and they got back to us after this terrific gig we did in Moscow a few years ago and said we'd like to release the recording. And so we thought, well, that's got something special about it. And that, in Australia, that album's only available through our website, but everything else is on Fish of Milk, which is distributed through Shock, so it's easily attainable in the stores, which is a great way to be.
The Next, if you aren't aware, Lloyd Swanson on the bass, Tony Buck on drums and percussion, and Chris Abrahams on the keyboards, piano. The great bulk of The Next's success, Lloyd, has been in Europe, if I may presume that. How would you describe the reaction of the US to The Next, the United States?
It's a little of a different category there, because we have, dotted across the states, we have some very, very loyal fans who know us through our album releases, but we've only played there just the once. Actually, we played in New York in 2001, about a month after September the 11th, which was a very interesting time to be in New York, to say the least. So we've always run the band pretty much as a cottage industry and just only taken on what we can handle. And that basically means running the record label, doing at least one tour of Australia a year, and doing at least one, sometimes two tours of Europe. That's plenty, you know, when we're booking the gigs ourselves and running the label and that, and also in Europe and the US and Canada, we've got about half a dozen of our albums released on a label called RER Megacorp. So we're liaising with them for all that stuff. So we get emails all the time from fans in the States saying, when are you going to play Boulder, Colorado? And, you know, when are you going to come to Austin, Texas? And it's like, look, we would love to, but there just isn't the concentrated support there that it would cost us. You know, we're prepared to invest in our career. We do all the time, and we're prepared to lose some money in the short term. But mounting a US tour would be very, very daunting. So we just say, look, one day, you know. Mm. And sooner or later, someone's going to come along and actually make some offers, which is how things will get started.
I was going to sort of touch on that. The trio seem to perform together every year, as you mentioned, but only for sort of 2 or 3 months, so sort of like what I thought was the Tennis Williams sisters of the jazz world. Has the performance rarity, I suppose, contributed to the cult status?
I think it has. People may not be aware that for most of the band's career, our drummer has lived overseas, Tony Buck, and most people would find that a fairly severe impediment to running a band, but we've actually very much turned it into a positive. Because the music is improvised, we don't have to rehearse, and as I said at the start of the show, we pretty much locked the concept in place in that intensive workshopping before we went public all those years ago. So if anything, it's actually quite stimulating to get back together and find out what we've all been doing. And, you know, Tony has ideas from the people he's been playing with in Europe and North America. There's also the fact that, yes, it does make it just a little more special. I'm sure if all three of us lived in Sydney, eventually the punters would get to a point where they go, oh, the Next are on. It's like, oh, well, I can see them next time, you know. But there's always the suspicion there might not be a next time for quite a while.
And it's not the type of band or even the type of concept where you, okay, well, Tony's not available, let's find a drummer.
Yeah, exactly. I honestly don't know what we'd do if someone fell ill or injured, you know, on the day of a performance. I think we'd have to cancel, which would be most unfortunate, but I just don't think there's any alternative. The other thing I was going to say is that it's worked out really well for us in Europe, because Tony is our man on the ground there, and he's set up the bulk of the tours we've done there. We've sometimes gone with an agent for various reasons, but mostly he's set them up, and he's basically just contacting the people that he plays with the rest of the time when he's not working with us.
Now, when we were talking last week with Adrian Klumpis, he mentioned certainly the market for his band Triosk in Europe's a little different to Australia, because it's pitched as like a new music over there rather than the label jazz. Mm-hmm. Is it a similar sort of thing happening for the Next over there in Europe?
Yeah, look, we've never really settled on the single label that works for us, and we've tried to fit across a few categories, which I know can be hell on the people in the record stores, just not knowing what bin to put you in. Sometimes I go to a record store to see if they've got our product, and I don't know where to start looking myself. I think in Europe for us, we tend to get grouped in with free improvisation, and listeners may or may not be aware that there's a really significant and substantial tradition of improvisation in Europe. We often tend to lump it in with like the free jazz that came out of the 60s in America, but it has next to nothing to do with jazz. It's pure improvisation. It's a really substantial scene. There's festivals, there's people that make good money performing these things. So we tend to be associated with that. While here in Australia, there's really a little bit of everything. You know, we came from the jazz scene. We do have that improvisation credential, but we've also somehow got some credibility with the Triple J sort of audience, and we get people whose other listening is probably very much pop and rock, and this is the one band outside of that they listen to.
Lloyd, is there any comment you'd like to make about the second track, Buoyant?
Well, the way we compose our pieces, 9 times out of 10, we just stare at each other in the studio and say, well, you know, who's got an idea? And we see what we come up with. And to tell you the truth, I can't recall how the first track, Fatal, had its germination. But I do recall that Buoyant started off with this electronic sequence from a DX7, the sort of classic Yamaha keyboard that a lot of people don't play anymore, but Chris Abrams thinks is a very special instrument and much overlooked. He came up with this sequence, and that was literally, I mean, I'm actually kind of amazed in hindsight that we managed to build an entire piece just from this ongoing rhythmic sort of plinks and plonks pretty much at the start of the piece.
The Knicks have a brand new album out. What number is this?
I think number 13.
Number 13.
Yeah, it's a little tricky. I don't know if you count double albums as two, and we did do a 4-disc live set a few albums back, but in terms of actual releases, it's number 13, yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. Now, the new album employs the sound of the guitar. Firstly, I want to know who's playing it, because it's not attributed on the album sleeve. Secondly, is it a taste of things to come in employing a larger instrumentation for the next?
Well, in answer to your first question, that's our drummer, Tony Buck, playing guitar on all three tracks. The reason we didn't credit it is because for about the last half a dozen albums, we haven't put any credits, because it's just been us, and we figure we didn't want any, you know, it's a bit like the Sydney Swans with their no dickheads policy. We didn't want anyone standing out. We're all playing for the team. Although we thought this was something to talk about, because we've done 12 albums without guitar, and suddenly there's a guitar on every track. We just thought we've got to maintain this idea that we've stuck with for a while, that it's just the next. I think if we brought in outside musicians, it would only be fair to credit them. But you can assume from now on that any instruments you hear are played by us. And I'd be very excited for Tony to play some guitar on future albums. Outside of that, I'm not aware of any hidden talents. I think that's the last hidden talent, actually.
It does work. I mean, the guitar sounds quite appropriate in this album, and it hasn't, although it's a different direction to previous albums, it certainly it fits the bill, doesn't it?
I'm glad you think that, because that's what we felt. We didn't want to lose sight of what the Knicks sound like, and there is something about a piano, bass, drums trio. It's a very distinctive sound, and I think we managed to incorporate the guitar without sounding like we'd sort of changed direction too dramatically.
Having three distinct pieces on one album is also a departure from the norm. How do you describe the contrast between these three tracks?
Well, I think the first piece we heard, Fatal, I think that has a churning, fairly turbulent atmosphere to it. It's actually quite an intense, dramatic piece to kick off with. Something about it reminds me of some things that the band was doing a good 10 years ago. The second piece that we just heard there, Buoyant, is very spacey. There is a passage a little after where we just faded out, where the drums come in fairly solidly, but it's not a total freak out. It never builds to a huge intensity. There's a definite reference in there, a tribute to Miles Davis's classic album In a Silent Way, which I think was definitely one of the key albums that got us thinking in this direction in the first place. And I think in this postmodern era, it's lovely to pay tribute in that fashion without looking like you're ripping someone off. And the third track, which I understand we probably won't get to hear tonight, I think that one was very much defined, and people will just have to buy the album to hear that. I think that was very much defined by Tony's guitar on it. It's almost like what is referred to as post-pop. Probably the least jazzy thing we've done in ages.
Okay.
Yeah, very, very guitar-based, and a lot of pop and rock vibe in there.
Now, as you mentioned before, Tony Buck, based in Europe, with a number of different and diverse projects for each of the three of you, how do you prioritise, especially when your own band, The Catholics, has been very successful as well?
Yeah, really, we basically prioritise the next. That's everything else has to work around that. I mean, everyone's prepared to give where necessary.
So the next is the number one priority, and really it is the it's the driving force for Lloyd Swanton.
Yeah, I think so. I'm absolutely so proud of what I've done with The Catholics, and I get such pleasure out of playing with The Catholics, and I wish I had time to push it more. But if we really want to... I guess about 10 years ago, I just had to make a bit of a rational decision. I thought, well, I've got a seven-piece band that I run myself, which I love playing with. It has next to no profile outside Australia, and it's a huge job to organise it and get it up on stage. On the other hand, I'm like a co-leader of a three-piece band, which is doing very, very well, has an international profile, and we got more work being thrown at us than we can actually handle. So I just had to say, well, you know, that's where I've got to, you know, I do have to make a career, and that's where I have to the basket I have to put most of the eggs in. And every other project I do, it's not just the next and The Catholics. There are other other things I'm involved with that I get a great pleasure out of, but they do have to work around my schedule with the next.
And speaking about that schedule, this coming Saturday night, the Catholics actually has a gig here in Sydney.
Yes, one of our rare performances. I guess if we play half a dozen times a year in Sydney, we're happy to still be getting up on stage and doing that thing that we love doing. This is at the Sound Lounge at the Seymour Centre, which is a terrific venue for listening. It really is a very sophisticated venue. We'll be there playing some of the sort of more atmospheric repertoire that you referred to earlier from our new album Gondola, and a few of the old happy hippie numbers. And we've got a couple of fill-ins who are both very experienced Catholics members. Jeremy Borthwick will be on trombone. He's a sensational trombonist, and he's always been my number one fill-in if James Greening can't make it. Likewise, Carl Dewhurst, who's a brilliant guitarist, is filling in for Bruce Reed, our slide guitarist. So, yes, it's going to be the good old Catholics with just a bit of an injection of fresh perspective from those two guys. I present a show on Tuesdays on Eastside called Mixed Marriage, and with our annual fundraiser, we get a lot of the performing talent that presents shows at Eastside. And so I'll be playing with about five different Eastside artists in the first set, and then the second set is the Mucho Mambo Band, which is a fantastic mambo big band. So that'll be a terrific event tomorrow night.
Tonight, Lloyd, it's been fantastic talking to you tonight.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you,
Thanks
Frank.
Very much for joining me. Yeah. And all the best for the next and the success of this brand new album. Thanks very much, Lloyd, and good night.
Yeah, thanks.